The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
And Brian O'Driscoll is with us live this evening. Good evening, Brian.
Good evening, Nathan. How are you?
I'm okay. So the Ireland team to play Italy at the weekend has been named. We'll get on to that in a moment. But I did want to talk to you about Gary Halpin. It was a real shock and such sadness yesterday when the news came through that he had died at such a young age, just 55, three children. Keith Wood and Mick Galway and Nick Popplewell were on the show last night and they paid a fitting tribute to Gary Halpin that I think people should really listen back to if they want to get a sense of the man. He was part of that Leinster squad when you first went in. He always came across as a real infectious character.
Yeah, he, you know, I was new to the game coming in as was a 20-year-old and, you know, he'd just come across to Ireland, to Leinster for a couple of seasons. And yeah, he was the life and soul of that team. Great crack to be around, very kind of generous with everybody, just fun, always trying to have a laugh at any opportunity, but he took his rugby very seriously at the same time. So just a really brilliant character to have in your environment. And I think the tributes that you, the outpouring of grief, you know, besides Poppy and Mick Galway, but just I'm on, you know, different WhatsApp groups and the effect that people in the UK had, you know, that generation, that slightly older generation, the Martin Bayfield era, everybody that has been in contact with them over the course of the last 30-40 years has had good things to say about them and nice memories and only speak glowingly about them. And it's just incredibly sad that he's been taken way before his time, another one gone before he should be, and very sad for his young family, and definitely thoughts are with them at this time.
He was of that era that while they worked hard, they also knew how to enjoy themselves off the pitch. Going into that dressing room, was he a good influence?
Yeah, he was. You know, a lot of those players came, you know, through the amateur era, so it was probably more challenging for them to understand what professionalism was. I guess the penny didn't drop with me for a good few years, and I was always a professional because I had spent time with those guys that had jobs and yet were still playing for the national team. So that, you know, you can't just flick a switch overnight, and he was definitely one of those guys that, you know, enjoyed you know, the, I suppose, the amateur era, but then, you know, tried to be as good a pro as he could be. But it's not as easy as it might appear when you really only known one way. But what a fun person to be around. You know, I read a great story. I don't know, sent it on WhatsApp. And you know, we had done something similar, but when he was in Harlequins, they went to like the equivalent of the Rangers, the Armed Rangers, to get, you know, a bit of steel put into them to find out what sort of people they were. Anyway, they were flogged and you know, denied food, and everyone was miserable and wet and hungry, but yet the Rangers were kind of spying and listening in on all their conversations. And late one of the nights, he let out a huge roar when everyone else was moaning and whinging, and so I was like, "God, guys, you know, what's wrong with you? Okay?" He goes, "I've just bit my lip on my cheeseburger." And it was responded with belly laugh. So that kind of was him in a nutshell. At your lowest ebb, he could always provide some form of humor to pick the group up. And yeah, he's a real loss to everyone that knew him.
Yeah, he sure is. He sure is. Gary Halpin, as I say, plenty of tributes if you want to listen back to them over the last couple of days. So Six Nations is back this weekend, and a lot of the focus, Brian, over the last few weeks has been on number 10, and should it be Billy Burns, should it be Ross Byrne, Harry Byrne? And then we get news today that Joey Carberry is back and he could make his first appearance in over a year. He's in the Munster squad to play Cardiff Blues in the Pro 14 tomorrow night. He's only played two games since sustaining an ankle injury before the 2019 World Cup, but he is now an option off the bench. This, while it may not be relevant to this Six Nations, is massively welcoming news because everyone was fearing the worst around Joey Carberry.
Yeah, I think it's massive news to rugby fans. I don't think you have to be a Munster fan to get excited about that. Obviously, we know what his potential is. you know, the manner in which he came in to the international scene, and then, you know, went down and never got a proper crack at it down in Munster before these, you know, series of injuries hit him. And I think everyone has really felt for him over the course of the last 18 or so months, where, you know, it's been frustration upon frustration, not being able to properly rid himself of that ankle injury. But it's brilliant news from Irish rugby, you know, point of view of having another 10 option, where it's taken so much of the conversation space in more recent weeks with the uncertainty around who's going to be the heir to the throne, to Johnny Sexton. Almost Joey Carberry was nearly the forgotten man because he's been gone that long. Well, straight away, his name's back in the conversation prior to him even kicking a ball. And I think we all hope, keep our fingers crossed, that he remains injury-free and he's able to play his way into a bit of form. It's going to take time. I think any time you spend a concerted period out of the game, you have to be given, you know, 2-3 months. And certainly in the case with Dan Levy, that was before he picked up his most recent injury. You've got to give these guys time. So we won't see the proper Joey Carberry until into next season, but it's very exciting times with the knowledge that it's another hat in the ring for that number 10 slot.
It brings him back into our conversation, but Andy Farrell is clearly very aware of his progress over the last few months. And do you think maybe it actually has been a factor in his thinking around what happens next for the successor to Jonathan Sexton, whereas we've been focused on Billy Burns, Harry Byrne, potential fast-tracking, that he would have had an awareness that actually Carberry is on the way back, maybe not for this Six Nations, but will and should be a big factor as we head towards 2023?
Well, on the basis of what we've seen previously, of course he'll be a big factor. And yeah, Andy Farrell would have been more privy to what was going on with his rehab. I think Munster did the right thing and just ended speculation as to how long it was going to be and just said a concerted period of time he's going to be out. And we didn't know whether he was going to feature again this season. The fact that he's appearing in late February is a real added bonus. I suppose Andy Farrell would have known that he was nearing a return to play and that would have excited him. And I'm sure that had some form of bearing on his selections, that he didn't feel as though he needed to pick the wild cards that some of us have been suggesting in Harry Byrne or Crowley down in Munster, who showed very promising signs, that he's trying to give those, you know, third and fourth choice, what looks on the pecking order, the third and fourth choice players a bit of game time, but with the hope that at the same time he comes back into, you know, some form and is able to really challenge Johnny Sexton for the number 10 jersey over the course of this calendar year.
Well, Johnny Sexton is going to start on Saturday. Andy Farrell has made 7 changes to the side that were beaten by France last time out. Sexton and James Ryan have both been past fit. Conor Murray out still with the hamstring injury. It is an all-Leinster backline for the first time in living memory, while Ryan Baird and Craig Casey could make their debuts from the bench. A new look front row of Kilcoyne, Kelleher and Furlong. Ryan will be in the second row alongside Ian Henderson. Tadhg Byrne shifts to the back row. He'll be alongside Will Connors at open side and CJ Stander at 8. And then Jameson Gibson-Park at scrum half alongside Sexton. Robbie Henshaw will win his 50th cap in midfield with Gary Ringrose. Hugo Keenan retains the 15 jersey. James Lowe on the left wing and Jordan Larmour comes in on the right hand side in place of Keith Earls. Just before we leave the out-half selection then, Johnny Sexton, a lot of people have been talking about his future on the outside. He brought it on himself a little bit this week when he said, if we talk about World Cup cycles, I might not be part of the full cycle, but this group will definitely be better for this type of coaching and structure. He then, in an off-camera piece, said, well, actually, I just didn't want to be in a position where I'm saying I'm definitely going to be there and implying that I'm an automatic selection. He's in a difficult position, Sexton, because while this conversation is going on, it almost feels as though there's a pressure being put on him to voluntarily step aside to give other players the opportunity so that Ireland are in a great position by 2023, whereas that's not his job. His job is just to put himself up for selection every single week.
It's definitely not his job. And he, if he is true to form, true to the kind of the character that he has, he will go down kicking and screaming to hold on to his place, like any competitive test match animal would do. Many of us realize that the reason that we retire is because the game's getting away from us. And from my own perspective, I wanted to get out before I knew, before I was kicked out. Whereas Johnny Sexton feels as though there's at least a year, maybe two more years of quality in him. And I'm a firm believer that he can still absolutely deliver for Ireland in some capacity. Maybe he'll be back up, you know, 10 in a year's time. Who knows? But he definitely right now provides a security to this team that others don't. And I think with him at, in the number 10 jersey, he provides us with a better opportunity of winning. So no, it's not his responsibility to go and, you know, put his hand up and say, you know what, Andy, you know, you should blood other players. That's the coach's responsibility. And if he's being selected, I don't know any player that will ever turn down a test jersey. So, yeah, I guess it's a tricky one because he's captain of the team. He's obviously got a lot of a lot of power within the environment. You know, he's the focal point of a lot of the thoughts, I would imagine. So it's a difficult spot for any of the other 10s underneath him coming in while he's still around. So I would imagine over the course of the next couple of years before we get to the World Cup, that what he's suggesting is he won't be involved in all 23, you know, in all the test matches coming going forward. He can't be because they've got to give time to other 10s, Joey Carver if he comes back, or the two guys that are in and out, Billy Burns and Ross Byrne. They've got to give them game time. He knows that as much as anyone else. But right now he's being picked against Italy, and that says to me that they need to win that this game. And for me, he is best positioned to guide this team in what looks like a must-win game.
Italy is always a must-win game, and quite often it's not just victory, it's the manner of the victory. And particularly after Ireland's opening couple of performances and the lack of tries, there's been a big focus on Ireland's attack and maybe a lack of creativity. Andy Dunn was really interesting on Monday night when he's talking about the lack of offloads in Ireland's game, and the stats are pretty startling around that. When you look at the way Ireland are setting up, is it a bit of confidence that's missing? Is it a game plan? What do you put down the lack of creativity and excitement in the Ireland attack at the moment?
I think it's those two things. I think it's kind of hard to properly understand what they're trying to do shape-wise. I'm still very much on a learning curve on that. I guess what I would hope for a little bit more from Ireland is just showing a little bit more ambition. I watched the French game back again today, and to be honest with you, it felt as though they threw more offloads than the three that they were jotted down for them. Now, I don't know what the metrics exactly are, you know, with regard to offloads, because I looked at a 10-minute sequence and I definitely saw three offloads in that period of time. They didn't always go to hand, but Ireland are definitely trying to push the pass in certain circumstances. But I think they can do more. I think they can be a bit more ambitious as well, particularly from their launch plays. From scrum, you know, in the best place to launch, you know, an attacking scrum is between your own 22 and the opposition 40. That is the best place. And twice against France, we just saw two setups and then box kicks out of that territory. Let's show a bit of ambition, a bit of intent, a bit of hunger to try and cut defenses apart. And they can do it with good quality passing, good lines of running. You've got players that are capable of causing fractions in the opposition defense. So we've got to try and show that intent, because I think that's what the public is crying out for. And I'm sure as players, they're crying out for it. No one wants to chase kicks all day. No one wants to go after box kicks. You know, Keith Earl certainly doesn't. So let's try and get them playing this heads up, ball in hand, and not play a little bit afraid and think about that territorial game and, you know, that kicking game that the stats might add up, that, you know, the international team that kicks more, win more. Let's try and show a little bit of intent that it feels as though we're progressing and we've got an appetite to play a bit more than maybe we've shown. I think the knock-on effect of that is then the offload game. And I saw Andy Dunn talking about, you know, Gary Ringrose, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know, with his offload in the Wales game, for me, the issue wasn't that offload. The issue was the Conor Murray slap on to Ian Henderson that then didn't go to hand. You can't compound an error with another error, and that was the problem. I'm all for trying those passes, and some will stick and others won't. But I guess it's a mentality of understanding and seeing the situations and the scenarios when best to throw them. There's a brilliant example in the French game on the Olivon try that when they made good inroads on the Fiku carry, Jalibert got the pass then, and straight away you could see his head kind of twitching into what exactly he was about to do. He identified by the way he shaped his body that he wasn't going to make a line break. But if you see the way he cut back in, Van der Vlier over pushed, Henshaw got stuck on some of the front runners, and so there was a bit of a gap. But straight away, he positioned his body to get into a place to offload. He wasn't looking to make a line break. And I think that's sometimes the error that you get caught into. You get drawn into thinking you can make a line break, but in doing so, you get hit hard and you're not in a controlled position to make the offload. Whereas he accelerated into the space, got the ball into his right arm away from Henshaw, and straight away arched it around Henshaw's back into Marchand, who did the exact same again. Two offloads, DuPont's offload, they're in behind, one more phase, and they're in the corner. Like, it seemed very simple, but it was just a state of mind of realizing, don't overplay your hand sometimes. And I think we're guilty of doing that, particularly in the forwards, in trying to be ball carriers. The best place to offload isn't in the middle of your power output. It's not at the end of it, because you're way more in control of the ball when you're in the middle of that collision zone, rather than right at the end when you're falling and trying to throw the miracle offload. If you can get to a position where maybe you could make another couple of yards, but actually you pull back and you change the point of contact, and then the next person does that again, the cumulative effect of that is it keeps the defense guessing. They can't realign, they can't get organized, and that's where you get mismatches. So I just think it's a little bit of a mind, kind of a switch of mindset needed to not try and extract every last yard from each carry. Pull it back a little bit. Think about the Toulouse teams or the French teams of old. They don't go to the nth degree of where their carry is capable of getting to. They pass before that shot comes in or before the big collision comes. And I think that is something that you can teach, but it's also something that players should understand from being in that situation multiple times.
Does it suggest, though, a fear of losing possession?
No, I don't think it does. I think it's just having an awareness that you're far more likely to make more inroads in Test rugby by changing the point of contact than by bludgeon, particularly a team like Ireland. South Africa, different mindset because of the size of their ball carriers. We aren't that type of team, and never will be, never have been. So we've got to think our way around it. We have this recurring conversation about the offload game. And being realistic, it's the only way we're going to be able to progress and sustain that progression at that next level that we've managed to achieve in the past, under Joe Schmidt, is to evolve our game and push the pass a little bit more, because we come up short against the more physical teams. So we've got to try and change and modify things slightly to make life a little bit easier. Teams are too organized now, yeah, and they'll happily defend for 20, 25 phases. And we punch ourselves out. That's what happens. We end up going nowhere. We'll hold on to lots of possession. The stats will look great, but ultimately we don't do anything with the possession. Whereas you need to push the pass a little bit, and some will go to ground. Some won't, be beautiful viewing on a Monday morning video session. But we will get some scores from the ones that do stick. And I think that's the necessity of where this team needs to push themselves.
So we'd prefer five players to bring the ball forward 3 yards at a time and take the impact and all that goes with that, rather than the quick offload, take the risk and maybe one player gets it 15, 20 yards and the relief that gives everybody else.
Totally. But in those three potential offloads, the point of contact changes each time. So the potential setting of the next ruck is uncertainty with each one. When someone's carrying, when you have a bullocking run and impact, and you might carry someone for 5, 6, 7 meters, it's very clear where that ruck is going to be. And so the defensive system can just fan back make sure they get their spacings. But if you have guys interlinking and, you know, little changes of point of contact, and the perfect example of that is the Olivon, you know, try, the three offloads. Change. Ireland are in behind. They're disorganized in out on the wing. You've got Reece Ruddock, you know, second last defender, Gibson Park. It was unlucky in that the bounce pass is very hard to read. But straight away, France were in a really positive position to be able to take advantage because they continually changed that point of contact. And it's something, Joe, you know, it's another thing is anytime you watch videos of like the likes of Australia, New Zealand, and you only get snippets of them at training sessions, whenever they go and form a ruck, and they're playing, you know, uncontested, it feels like at the point of the ruck, they always throw an offload. I don't think we ever do that. I don't think you'll ever see someone. You just go to ground and, you know, look at long bodying it.
Is it a skill set issue?
It's a mindset as well. I don't think it's a skill set because I can see Ireland pushing the pass. They're not as good. Some players are better than others, and some, you know, it mightn't innately be part of their game. But CJ Stander, after Olivon scored the try, we kicked off. They kicked back down to us, and Stander carried in, won a collision, and then offloaded to Keenan, who was in support play, and he made a little half break, chipped over the top. Now, on another day, he holds that ball, or the defense is slightly more disorganized, and that's a half chance. So we're very capable of doing it. I think we just need to do it more, and particularly players like Stander that we know are brilliant ball carriers. If he can just pull back 10 or 15% and not think about that extra couple of yards, but think about the offload, that will lend itself to our whole attacking shape, our whole attacking game, look being considerably better because you stop the defense from knowing exactly the certainties of where things are going to be and then organize themselves as a result.
Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team, Team of Us, everyone in. Brian O'Driscoll is with us on this Thursday evening. The problem, I guess, now for Ireland is that it's Italy and there's an expectation not just to win, but to win well and play that style of rugby. And you've gone up against Italy many times. Can you then read a lot into that because of the quality of opposition? Presumably all of this is far easier against an Italy than it will be against an England.
That's not Ireland's problem, though, this weekend, who the opposition is. They've got to go out and think about a performance. Like, the result is important from Andy Farrell's point of view, of course, because there would be huge pressure heaped on him and the coaching ticket if Ireland don't win. That's the reality of where we are. We've lost two games. You know, to lose three in a row would, of course, be a massive pressure situation. But Ireland can't worry about that. They've got to think about how they evolve their game plan. And by being collision winners and by doing those things of changing the point of contact and keeping Italy guessing, the thing a defence wants is certainty. And as soon as you create uncertainty, you get mismatches, you get individuals defending together that don't normally do that. And that's where you get those mismatches. That's where you get James Lowe. That's where you get Larmers on the ball and ability to beat, you know, tight five out in the wider channels. And that's where we'll get our scores. There just hasn't been an awful lot of that. And I feel for these players because you can sense that there's a frustration in them that they want to cut loose. Partly the game plan, partly the willingness to constantly kick the game, kick the ball, but also just not having, you know, softening the defence enough because of that lack of point of contact change has made it life more difficult for them having to create their own space.
It's interesting you say that you get the sense the players want to cut loose. Listening to Mike Cass on Monday, you get the sense that Mike Cass wants the players to cut loose as well. So there's clearly some sort of a breakdown somewhere.
Yeah, there is. And I don't know what it is because you look at the structures, and I do think we're helped this weekend by having Tadhg Furlong starting. He's definitely our best ball player in the pod that we play. You know, when you look at that pod of three with the back out the back, he's comfortably the best at taking it aggressively to the line, offering the tip inside or the tip outside, but also that pull back to that back, you know, 2 or 3 meters behind, you know, for the next phase play to be launched. And I think we need more players capable of doing that because it sits the defence down on the inside and the knock-on effect is it creates uncertainty to the wider defenders, and that's where you'll have the likes of Gary Ringrose and Larmour exploiting uncertainty and dog legs and breaks in the link in the link chain. So I think you look at, you know, Connors needs to be in there. I think James Ryan has to be in there, carrying with intent, but also carrying with intent and still having the ability to play make as well. And that's where you look at the likes of the All Blacks. That's where they're exceptional, because they're all ball players. You look at Brodie Retallick and Sam Whitelock, their ability to carry to the line and throw those different passes, that's what's distinguished them from the rest of the second rows in the world for a number of years. We have to have the ability to evolve into that type of team that can keep teams guessing with uncertainty as to what we're going to do.
Jordan Larmour is into the side. He's in on the wing. Hugo Keenan keeps his place at full back. Is that the future now for Larmour, when you've watched Keenan over these first couple of games, that it's as a winger rather than as a full back?
Probably at the moment. You know, it's early days in Keenan's tenure as Ireland full back. I see Jacob Stockdale is back playing for Ulster this weekend as well, which is good news from Andy Farrell's perspective to have multiple options. But Keenan has been very secure. He hasn't been perfect. You know, you could pick holes in some of the things he's done. But for the most part, there's a real security in when the ball is kicked back there. He doesn't make many bad errors. And I think that's probably what differentiates him from Stockdale and from Larmour in the backfield, is that he looks as though he's going to limit his bad moments to non-catastrophic impacts on the rest of the team. Whereas there's been a couple of situations where Larmour, even playing, you know, provincial, playing for Ireland, the uncertainty going for those high balls, it just has a negative knock-on effect. And I feel he's a huge threat on the wing. Yes, he's very exciting counter-attacking from fullback, but I still think he gets enough opportunity on the wing to be destructive, and similar to Stockdale. So I'm excited about, you know, Hugh Keenan getting a run of games and trying to bed down as Ireland's number 15 going forward.
I presume, despite all of these issues, you're still going for a convincing Ireland win.
Yeah, I think you have to be careful on convincing. I think, you know, giving Italy a bit of respect, I think there's two score lines against France and England. You know, France, it wasn't as bad. It didn't feel like a 50-pointer in their first game. Against England, they were very good in parts. You know, they were still only 7 or 8 points behind when there's that try, that Andy Watson try, when Farrell should have been penalised for the late challenge. So they're still kind of in the mix coming up to half time. Yes, England are going to blow them away in the second half, but I think Italy are improved. And you look at the glut of young guys that they've that have burst through onto the scene. You know, Varney. You know, you look at Garbisi at 10, Ioni on the wing coming in. You know, Trulla. These guys are all 19, 20, 21. So they definitely have a focus on the next couple of years. There might be a bit of short-term pain now, but these are exciting, young, talented players that will learn with the experience. And maybe there's a lesson to be learned from what they're trying to do. I guess they're in a different position, that they haven't won a Six Nations game for 29 matches. So the expectation isn't there. Slightly different to Ireland. But nonetheless, you know, Branko Smith is going to be given a bit of time to blood these guys. And it looks as though, by the way, their capabilities of playing, that they're going to be good players in 2 or 3 years' time, for sure.
The other story from today is we don't know when this Six Nations is now going to finish, because the France-Scotland game was called off. That was due to another positive COVID test in the French camp. They suspended training this morning. The testing oversight group for the Six Nations met today to review the situation, unanimously recommended that the postponement of that game that was due to take place in Paris on Sunday. No word as of yet when it'll happen. It seems because of the isolation measures that are required, maybe it won't be able to happen the weekend after. And they're talking potentially about July for this.
Saw that, yeah. It'll be interesting, the Lions boys flying back from their 2 weeks quarantine in Australia to come back and play a Six Nations game in July. It's the environment that we live in, and it was always a risk, wasn't it, that you wouldn't you wouldn't get these games all played. It's so important to the integrity of the competition that we see them all, and from the financial impact as well, to see an outright winner, and there's money for each place thereafter. So it has to be played out. But in an already clustered schedule, it's going to be tricky to find a window, but they'll have to do it because it's the pinnacle competition, Europe or international competition other than the World Cup, and it's the one that keeps an awful lot of the unions afloat. So they will find a place to play this fixture.
All right, loads more coverage of Ireland, Italy to come over the next couple of days. We'll have Ron Nogara and Alan Quinlan on OTB AM tomorrow morning. And if you want to get inside the mind of the Italians, get onto the OTB Sports app or youtube.com/offtheball and check out the conversation on today's Six Nations show. Neil Tracy was speaking to former Irish international Ian McKinley and getting his thoughts on the game. The Six Nations show is streamed every single Thursday right here on Off the Ball. We are going to take a quick break, but Brian is going to stay with us because we do want to talk about the John McLean case.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
You're welcome back. Brian O'Driscoll is still with us because, Brian, we did want to address the shocking story surrounding the former rugby coach, John McLean. If any listener isn't aware of the story, John McLean was a hugely influential figure in Irish rugby across several decades. He was a former head coach of the Irish schools team. He went on to become director of rugby at UCD. And last week, John McLean was sentenced to 8 years in prison after admitting to indecently assaulting 23 students at Terenure College between 1973 and 1990. John McLean left his role as a teacher in Terenure College in 1996, and it emerged during the trial that Father Robert Kelly, who was then provincial of the Carmelite Order, had met with McLean in the summer of 1996 after one boy's father reported abuse by McLean. During that meeting, McLean admitted to the allegation, after which it was made clear he would not be returning to the school. But after he left the school, he went on to take up a coaching role as director of rugby at UCD. Since the case concluded, it has emerged that the Gardaí are investigating complaints by further alleged victims. Brian, John McLean is somebody who was an important figure in your career. You played under him at schools level, at UCD. It is just horrific what he got away with over so many years.
It really is, Nathan. Yeah, he was influential in the early years. He was the first person to ever move me from out half into the centre. And a bit like everybody else over the course of the last 10 days in particular, when it's come to light the levels of abuse over the last 40 or so years, I've been as shocked and appalled as everybody else. How he managed to get away with it for so long, and how, you know, how he must have impacted those poor, unfortunate victims. You know, young kids, 12 years of age. It's actually unthinkable as a parent to think of that. And I guess, you know, from their point of view, I would congratulate them on their incredible bravery in staying the course with this and finally getting some justice. Although I don't know, you know, what justice there is in carrying that sort of baggage with you for 30, 40 years, but it's really shocked me. I guess as well, from my own point of view, what has upset me is the knowledge that every time that I might have spoken in a positive manner about him, what that must have done to those poor victims, how that must have impacted them, how it must have been like a knife in the stomach to them. Hearing someone speak glowingly about someone that has had such a negative impact on their lives. So, yeah, I've been appalled and disgusted at what I've read.
Because I'm sure they saw those interviews, and there was the clip from an interview you did with BT Sport, I think it's 4 years ago at this stage, October 2017, when you were asked during the piece who was the most influential coach of your career, and you said John McLean. And considering that, when the accusations first started to emerge in the months following that and subsequently what you've heard during the court case and seen since the conviction, what was your reaction when you first started to hear the accusations?
I think shock initially, because over the course I've probably been known John in some shape or form since Leinster Schools in 1997. So it was probably 20 years of having a relationship of some form or other with him. And then these allegations came. It was early 2018, and initially shocked at hearing when they came out. And then when more and more people came to the fore, and then ultimately when he pleaded guilty to all of those crimes in, was it November, December, and the realization of the impact and the depravity of what went on, it's just been a continual level of being appalled and disgusted at hearing the details of it.
I'm sure it's something that you've spoken to friends, former teammates, coaches about. And I'm sure the question that comes up all the time is, did you ever suspect anything?
Geez, Nathan, if I had ever suspected anything, I would never have spoken in a positive manner like I did that time in Blackrock College or at any other time. I was completely shocked by this in when it came to light a few years ago. And I know other people say that, you know, the dog in the street knew about it. I can honestly say anyone in the rugby circles that I was involved in never knew anything about it. So I was went for a walk in the park on Sunday and bumped into some ex-teammates in UCD and through Leinster Schools, and we were all discussing it, and everyone was equally shocked, right, by the findings of it.
Because the reports, and some of them over the last week, were that this was an open secret in rugby in Dublin.
Listen, and perhaps in some factions it was, but certainly in any circle that I was, you know, involved in, there's no way that you wouldn't speak as you know, teenagers about, you know, those sorts of rumours. There's no way you would go on summer tours if you had any concerns whatsoever. It was an absolute shock. You know, I had him as a kind of a quiet, reclusive sort of person, but I guess you don't always know the person behind the mask.
Mm. You mentioned there meeting him at a relatively young age. How McLean ended up at UCD must be a huge cause for concern. It does fit in with how abusers in this country have got away with it, that despite admitting in 1996 that the allegation was true, rather than action been taken at the time, he was moved along without anything being said. It's quite shocking that he was able to leave Terenure and to continue to work with young people.
It's completely unacceptable. It's a disgrace that someone like him could be protected in moving between positions. You know, have we not learned anything from the past? Things being swept under the carpet, pretending they never happened. It's totally unacceptable, and it can never happen again. That's what these predators do. They move between positions, preying on the vulnerable again, identifying who they are. It's something that just simply shouldn't and can't happen.
Over the last few weeks, and well, even since the accusations came to light in 2018, you've probably reflected on your interactions with John McLean through the years and his interaction with rugby. Do you think he used his rugby connections and his influence on successful players to almost future-proof himself for when the allegations, if they were eventually surfaced, that he knew by being such an influential figure in rugby that maybe that could offer him some form of protection?
Maybe. I suppose, you know, you'll never know with regard to the relationships that he tried to foster. You know, whether he was, you know, building a bridge between, you know, the victims and the allegations that were inevitable to come out, that, you know, he was a person of substance in, you know, rugby circles, and it was going to be more difficult to challenge someone in that was held in high esteem or was respected, perhaps.
Yeah. You mentioned the testimony of the victims, and listening to what McLean put them through, it is just heartbreaking. And while an 8-year sentence is some form of justice, it won't change the long-lasting effect it had on many people's lives, unfortunately.
No, it's not. Those people have lived with this burden and secret for, you know, far too long. They've gotten some form of justice, but I don't think there's ultimately any justice in that. And yeah, I guess I look back on you know, any of my dealings with John, and I think he's a total and utter fraud. I think nothing that, you know, I can ever look back on the conversations I had and take it at face value because of what went on, you know, in previous years.
Brian, thanks for talking about it. For anybody listening in, if you want, you can get in touch with 1 in 4. They can be contacted on 01662 4070. That's 01662 4070.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.